From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. By one report, credit card fraud has increased 87% since 2010. That's resulted in losses of $6 billion. Here in Washington State, the Federal Trade Commission reports that in 2011 alone, there have been more than 4,800 complaints of identity theft. Often, identity theft happens because hackers are able to get your password. It's gotten so bad that some say the era of the password is over. We'll have to find another way to keep our digital data secure. How do thieves steal your identity? What can you do to prevent it? And if it happens, what should you do next? I'm at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. 800-289-5869, or write to us, conversation at KUOW.org. If you've got a question, our guests may have answers for you. Julie Meyer is the Federal Trade Commission's Northwest Division. The FTC has been the federal government's central repository for identity theft complaints. They also provide victim assistance and consumer education, and she's with us today to educate us. Julie, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
How common are complaints about credit card debt, and how are they here in Western Washington compared to the rest of the country?
Well, they're one of the highest categories of reported types of identity theft nationally, and that's self-reported complaints that the Federal Trade Commission receives directly from consumers. They're about 14% of all complaints nationally related to identity theft. But in Washington, it's the highest category, which is 17%, so a little bit higher. Nationally, the highest reported kind of ID theft, it relates to government documents or benefits fraud.
Are these numbers on identity theft going up, Julie?
They are going up. We, just like I said, track self-reported complaints. There's some studies out there, though, that do track that are even broader. For example, I know the Javelin Strategy and Research team did a study not associated with the FTC, but they found, I think, 1.8 million consumers learned they were victims of ID theft in 2010, and that's gone up over the past few years.
If I had my identity stolen, I might call the police, first of all. Are you at the Federal Trade Commission capturing all the reports that are going out to the various different agencies when you come up with your assessment of how bad it is?
We hope we are. We urge people to file a complaint with us by phone or through our website, ftc.gov or .gov. And then also to file a police report. And that's because the two things, the FTC complaint and a police report, become sort of an ID theft victim's ticket to relief. It becomes your ID theft report, those two documents. And that's something you can use to dispute problems you see on your credit report stemming from the identity theft, be it charges that you didn't make or entirely new accounts that are not yours. As well as directly with, you know, banks, credit card issuers, other companies that have charges or transactions that weren't yours. And when you give them those two documents, that helps bolster your case a lot more.
Do local law enforcement agencies share information with you? Does the Seattle Police tell you that we got X number of complaints this month and details about them?
I'm not sure if it happens on that regular basis. I think it depends agency to agency, but the idea is, yes, that this data is shared across law enforcement agencies, police reports, state attorney general's office across the country, and then our data then becomes available to all of those law enforcement agencies because it's, you know, it's a interstate crime. I mean, you can have patterns of, you know, ID theft rings where they're targeting victims certainly across state lines, and that's, you know, seems to me to make sense with online, you know, identity theft where information is just being grabbed from consumers and it's not limited to a particular location.
Now, I understand ID thieves are even focusing on foster children. How's that work?
Well, we've seen, I think, a rise in child ID theft, period, And with foster kids, the link seems to be from outside studies, not that the FTC has done, but it seems to be because foster children's information is in the hands of so many different entities, agencies, not that they're doing bad things with it, but there's just a lot of information being tracked across agencies, and they don't have a constant advocate, a parent in their life who can protect that data and then also be, you know, checking their credit reports, which is something we urge people to do with, you know, their own children, which seems, you know, kind of a surprise, I think, to a lot of people. But especially if your child's approaching like age 16 or applying for a car loan or an apartment or a job, check their credit report and, you know, make sure they didn't have one already that somebody else created. And now federal law requires child welfare agencies who are helping foster children to do that when a foster child is 16 and before they're emancipated.
Julie, thank you so much for talking to us today. We appreciate it. Julie Meyer is the Federal Trade Commission, is with the Federal Trade Commission's Northwest Division. They're the federal agency that collects information about identity theft. Maybe you've got a question about how to prevent it from happening to you or what to do when it does happen. We're at 206-543-5869. It's toll-free. 800-289-5869. Maybe you've been through this and you'd like to share some advice for our listeners should they encounter it. You can write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Let's turn to law enforcement. Melinda Young is a deputy prosecuting attorney at the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, and she works on identity theft cases. Melinda, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So are you noticing an uptick in these kind of complaints?
We are. We seem to... You know, we get the cases after they're already solved, so it's hard for me to tell whether or not there's more of them out there or whether or not law enforcement is just able to spend more time on them and solve more of these cases.
What kind of ID theft do you deal with most commonly?
You know, it seems like the easy way for a lot of identity thieves to get people's information is from the simple ways. You know, they steal your mail, they break into your house, or they break into your car, and they're able to get your checks, your driver's license, and your credit cards, and go manufacturing from there.
Who are the criminals? Who's doing this? Do you know?
You know, it's all over the board. There's a lot of different people who do it, but there do tend to be two main groups of people that have really gotten into identity theft more often than other groups. One are people who are addicted to methamphetamines. They seem to form rings and do this together as a group. And also people who tend to have gang ties. They've realized that this is a crime in which you can make a lot of money potentially. Punishments can be smaller than they can be for violent types of crime. And your risk of detection is less with these kinds of crimes than it can be with doing other things.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So you're getting these crimes turned over to you when law enforcement says they have a case to make. But do you figure that's really a small percentage of the overall number of crimes taking place? Is it hard to make these cases?
It depends on what it is. We tend to have surveillance cameras up in a lot of retail establishments and a lot of other places. So you capture these images and then... Law enforcement has gotten a lot better in recent years in sharing information. So they're able to share information as long as you have that surveillance image. But the flip side is the online theft, and those are a lot tougher to track. They take a lot more resources, and we see a lot fewer of those in our office because they are a lot tougher to solve. So it kind of depends on which type of crime you're talking about.
Melinda, in your view, is the punishment adequate to discourage people from committing identity theft?
For the most part, it is. You know, we don't want to send people to prison for 20 years for committing what is, in essence, a property crime. On the other side, you want to make sure that you adequately address what it is that people are doing. There can be some people who can commit a large crime spree, and they may face a very low time because it's their first time in the system. That can be very frustrating from a prosecutor's perspective. But for the most part, when we're starting to talk about ultimately people who've been in the system one time after another, identity theft does tend to be treated more seriously than other types of property crimes, and we are looking at years in prison for the worst offenders.
That's my impression that the consumer, if they report it quickly, does not get caught up having to pay for any kind of bills churned out by the person who stole their identity. But who ends up paying?
Usually it's the banks that end up paying, or the credit card companies, or sometimes the retail establishments end up paying. The frustrating part for the consumer mostly is that if your information is stolen once, even if they catch the person who has it the first time, it can be used over and over again. So you always have to be vigilant, knowing that somebody out there, some criminal, has gotten your information and could have passed it on dozens or hundreds of times.
What are the ways that people, what are the things they can do to avoid being a victim of identity theft?
Well, there's always the easy ways to do it. You know, don't leave your credit cards or your checkbooks or your driver's license in your car. If you have it in your house, put it someplace that's really safe and keep your house locked up. You know, have a locked mailbox. But the truth is, for most people, it's not really a matter of if you're going to be a victim. It's a matter of when you're going to be a victim, because there's so many other different ways. You know, if a criminal gets into a business that's kept your information, whether it's online hacking or whether they physically have your information, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. You have to trust the businesses to protect your information for you.
What should I do if I suspect that I am the victim of identity theft?
Well, I think some of the things that Julie said are absolutely true. I think the first thing you should do is, you know, continually check your credit reports. Even after you've discovered it, keep doing that. Report a fraud on your credit report. Report it to the FTC. Report it to your local police agency. And then keep monitoring it. Some of the great things you can do if you yourself want to be able to discover who it is who victimized you is you can find out where it is that they've used it, and you can contact that business and say, hey, if you've got surveillance, can you save that surveillance until law enforcement can get it for you? And then you can call law enforcement and say, they've got a surveillance. Whenever you have a chance, I've asked that they save that for you, and then they can get it. The more you can do to help yourself as a victim, the better off law enforcement will be able to help you.
Now, Julie was saying you should report it to the FTC. You should obviously report it to the police. Do you have to report it to a bunch of different places?
You do. I think that is the best way to make sure that it gets out there. The FTC isn't going to go investigate it, but they are going to put it in databases that's going to be able to establish patterns. We do see sometimes that organized crime rings that are international may come in and do a variety of different scams on people, and the only way we're going to be able to spot those patterns is if there's some sort of national or federal agency looking at those patterns to help us determine where they are.
Melinda, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Melinda Young, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney at King County, where she works on identity theft cases. Let's turn to someone who's in the business of trying to stamp this out. Paul Coker is President and Chief Scientist at Cryptography Research Incorporated. They specialize in solving complex data security problems. Paul, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Ross.
How much of identity theft is due to our own carelessness, the digital equivalent of leaving the front door unlocked?
Well, you know, a lot of it is preventable if users are careful, but the systems that you're describing as the front door are awfully complicated. So you can blame the victim or you can blame the people who are building these systems where an intelligent user is going to make mistakes. If the system is not designed well, over the population, there will certainly be a lot of problems.
Can we talk about passwords for a moment? I was in a workshop one time, and the person running the workshop was able to find out an awful lot of information about me, unbeknownst to me, and I think a lot of it went to figuring out passwords or even just login names that I had been using. What should we consider when it comes to trying to prevent those things from being stolen?
Well, the most important thing is to make sure that you're not reusing the same password or a related password between critical sites and other sites. So the most important ones are typically someone's email and financial sites. So if your password is either the same or related, so if you've got a password for abc.com, which has the letters ABC, then on xyz.com you have the same password substituting XYZ, what happens is that when somebody breaks into one website, they will take the information they stole from that site and then try to use that to log in other places and will very likely compromise your information that way.
You know, Wired magazine recently proclaimed the death of the password, and Google's predicting we're not going to have passwords in the future. We'll have some kind of a physical key to replace them. Do you think that's true?
There are certainly are places where those are have been very effective and very successful, but the number of different relationships that a user has with different services is so large that you can't have a physical device from each one of them and be able to manage that in practice. So I think it's going to take a long time to eliminate passwords for end users. And in the interim, I think users just need to be very careful with the passwords that they've got.
You mentioned some ways not to craft a password. What are some good ways to craft a password so that you can remember it? You can come up with a password that's very random, but then it's hard. You have a hard time remembering what it is for all these different places where we use passwords.
You know, one of the techniques that works pretty well is to memorize a phrase that isn't something other people would know and then use, for example, the second letter of each word or the first letter in each word. That way you can have a fairly long password that's pretty easy to remember.
And it's a bad idea to use a central password everywhere and maybe add a few letters onto it that would help identify the particular site that you're going to. You're saying that's easily hacked?
Exactly. The attackers are onto that.
Do you think it's getting worse, Paul?
Well, it's getting worse for a couple different reasons. One is that the attackers are making a lot of money. The other is that we've got this sort of pack rat mentality among many companies who are working in kind of a gray area where their business model is about collecting information about users and warehousing as much as possible in order to then monetize that later. But that kind of business model drives companies to really collect a lot more information about end users. And when they then have security problems or try to monetize that information to people who are willing to pay for it, that information can then be misused.
Well, of course, you're making me think of Facebook and Google, two companies that collect an enormous amount of information about all of us. Are their security systems up to the threat of some of these giant breaches we've seen elsewhere?
You know, the Facebooks and Googles of the world generally do a pretty good job, but when you start looking down at, for example, individual app developers who are making a free game and are going to perhaps try to collect as much information as possible to get advertising dollars from that, that's where you start seeing some very poor protections on systems.
And we're kind of talking about this personally, but of course businesses and even the Defense Department and our utilities have been pointed out in the past as places where people can hack into by getting a hold of passwords by using various devious means. When you look at the national picture there, are you alarmed?
Oh, it's very alarming. I mean, if you look at the rate of computer security problems, the problems are getting worse every year. So it's not only that we're not making progress, it's that we're losing ground. And really losing ground on all fronts. I mean, you've got invasions of privacy for commercial reasons. You've got fraud. You have theft of corporate and government information. And then internationally, you've got the problem of privacy invasions for the purpose of monitoring populations for dissidents and other folks. And all of these issues are getting worse every year.
So the security officials, people who are doing what you're doing in private business, are having a hard time keeping up with the people who are trying to steal this information?
Right. And even if one particular system is well hardened, it just means in many cases the attackers will just go after a different target. And when the information somebody is trying to get is on a huge number of different systems, it doesn't matter if most of them are well protected. It's the low-hanging fruit that determines whether the attacker is successful or not.
What's the one piece of advice you would give listeners to protect themselves?
Well, beyond picking good passwords, probably the second most important is to make sure that you understand about the insecurity of email and phishing. So the from information in emails is completely unauthenticated and insecure. So knowing that whatever comes in an email could be and should be assumed to be untrusted is really important. And a lot of people assume that because the email looks like it's from somebody that it really is. So don't log into sites from anything coming in email. Go to a bookmark instead. Choose good passwords. Use hard disk encryption. Don't type your passwords into public computers that can have keystroke loggers. You know, use Wi-Fi encryption. A variety of kind of relatively common sense things that don't cost anything to do can really go a long way in terms of providing better protection online.
Paul, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Ross.
Paul Coker, President and Chief Scientist at Cryptography Research Incorporated. They specialize in data security problems. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.